All right. Welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Williams. I have with me in the studio, Chris Hayden.
Good morning.
Buddy Chris. Haven't seen him in a little while. We're both busy. First time in the studio for 6 months. So it's been a bit of a lag, and not because I didn't want to get back in here, because I love talking about hunting and fishing and outdoors, but it's just life, you know. For me, I don't have any major big excuses, just, you know, I call it life domestica, which is the domestic life, I guess. Probably not the right way to say it. You would know better than me because you're more linguistic than I am.
Maybe.
But, you know, it's making lunches and doing dishes and cleaning up the house and taking kids to school and sporting events, and that can just take over your life. But since the last podcast, which was in June, I've been to a few gun shows. Chris and I went pigeon hunting, bandtail pigeon hunting, to be clear. We also went on a little grouse hunting trip. I did some deer hunting, got to go out on a salmon fishing trip with some buddies. Got to actually land a Chinook that I didn't hook, but got to reel in, which was nice. And that's pretty much what I've been up to in the outdoors. How about you, Chris? Have you done much this fall?
After the grouse hunting, the only outdoor related stuff I've done is going to landowners who I have permission to hunt on, and making sure some guys that have worked for me this last year who've helped me, who've had 615 tags, you know, Willamette Valley tags, be like, hey, you mind if this guy comes? That's about it. That's been my, well, just been too busy.
So really. You've been hooking your buddies up with good
hunting spots.
Well,
they're younger guys, and they drew the tags, and for people who don't know, that 615 tag is like 97% private land. Mm-hmm. So you have to know someone, and throughout the years, I have cultivated a group of properties, you know, building the people's trust and to where I can just show up and hunt. And these guys have helped me with some of my home builds. Like, hey, I just need this extra set of hands to unload stuff. I go grab one of them. So I've been kind of just like, maybe it's not the best idea, like long term, you know, having someone like, if I show up and they're there now. But like I said, they're young guys, so I want to get them some good opportunities.
Helping that next generation. Well, yeah. Already.
And some of them are already more accomplished at their age than I was with hunting, which is nice to see.
A lot of these hunters coming up, because of YouTube and just, they do so much research, they can be so meticulous, and they know everything about their gun. And I've seen a lot of good success this year from guys that got out. I didn't blacktail hunt. My son had a blacktail tag in his pocket. But I don't want to push my son. It's only his second year hunting. He's 13. And I don't want him to feel the pressure. Like, you know, you have to go hunting. Because it's a hobby that I want him to enjoy. He loved his first year and we found success. But this year, I would ask him every Thursday or Friday, hey, do you want to go out blacktail hunting this weekend? And he just kept telling me no. And I finally just said, okay, I'm not going to force it on him this year. Like, if he doesn't want to go. I went on a two-week Eastern Oregon mule deer hunt. We went for the whole season and a few days ahead of season, just because everything in Oregon is changing in 2026 as far as where the unit boundaries are. And we wanted our unit the way it always has been and have one more big hunt at it. And I harvested my buck on like the second or third day. And then I just hung out with my cousins and tried to get them on a big one, which we had an opportunity to big one, but it didn't quite come together. But we filled 4 out of 6 tags, and
that's good.
Brought some meat home, and it was a good hunt.
With kids too, it's like everyone's like, a lot of people I talk to are like slow walking their kids into the hunting thing, but I didn't have that. At least with fishing specifically, it's like my dad's like dragging you out on the boat. You're freezing.
Shivering the whole time.
And now it's weird too, because now I have a nephew, it's like 13, and I have a young daughter. And when we're going fishing now, it's like, well, we'll get up there at 9. And I'm like, this is kind of crap, because when I was a kid, you know, we're up at dark, you know, fishing in the rain. And now that he's, I think it's his age too, you know, he's in his 60s. So that caught up to him. But with honey, I had to ask. Mm-hmm. He just kind of waited until I asked.
Until you were ready.
Well, you kind of figure out on your own, maybe, if this is something that you're interested in. We'll see what happens with my kid.
You know? And I think all of us, we like it and love it, but then that first morning when you're walking up that first hill, you're like, holy cow, I wasn't prepared or whatever, you know.
But that's what they went through. That whole thing too, like, now there's more, because guys like campaigns, specifically him, I think, really made it more more visible, like you should be training in some way.
Yeah.
But our dads didn't do it.
Yeah.
They just worked for a living with their hands, and or you know, my grandfather certainly never did that. I've never seen him pick up a the only weight I ever saw him pick up is a fishing weight, you know. So they didn't do it. So sometimes when I'm going up that hill the first time, I'm like, God, how did they do this?
Right.
You know, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they weren't hunting such steep country. Maybe that had something to do with it. But
yeah, you think you're in shape and then you, you go up those first
few
hills.
You can never be too in shape, you know, to hunt. But we'll see. I mean, I've taken my daughter fishing a couple times. She's four. So she had this weird time. And I'm like, you know, my wife and I have different opinions on it, you know, so she's still at the age where fish are kind of scary, you know, and I didn't have that. So
my wife or my daughter, actually, she used to love to fish with me when she was little. She still will fish with me a little bit, but the hunting thing, she just has no interest.
And that's okay.
She's probably going to come with us this year because we're just going to do weekend hunts, a youth tag for my son. And I think she's going to come just to kind of experience it. She has no desire to harm an animal. She just loves all animals.
Hey, good for her. I mean, everyone's different. Some people just don't have that bone in them, you know.
Yeah.
It's weird, too, because I think if you have a... I tell the story a lot when I went when I was really young before I hunted with my dad. And he called... It was archery elk. It's kind of a weird thing to take a 10-year-old on, right? Or 9-year-old. But I had a real, like, eye-opening... experience, I think, and that's what kind of did it for me. So if you don't have that when you're really young, maybe it, like it doesn't, it's got to excite you in a certain way, I think. Like any other hobby you get interested into, there's something about that. And I had an experience like that, and I have other friends who had that same kind of experience that kind of always, you know, I haven't hunted a lot in the last couple of years. Mostly birds and stuff, but it's still all I think about in a way, or finding a way to go more or put myself in a position, because now I'm kind of getting towards a position where I'm just going to start hunting less but doing bigger hunts.
Yeah.
Like we talked about going to Alaska. I want to go, I was going to do it next year, but we'll see if it shakes out, but I wanted to do like a motorcycle trip to Saskatchewan.
Oh, wow.
For a bear hunt and ride it back, you know, do something cool, because I'm at a, you know, I'm almost 40, so I got to start doing, you know.
Got to start crossing off some stuff.
Yeah, I got to start crossing off some stuff that I've neglected the last few years, and then with work, you know, and the companies, it's kind of like I got to work a lot to make it happen, but then if you're working a lot, how are you going to make it happen?
Yeah.
So I'm in a weird position,
you know. Well, the thing for me, growing up doing it, I mean, I knew I had the bug right out of the gates. You know, the first time I went with my dad, I was like, okay, this is something I'm going to do. This is going to be part of my life forever. And I think when my wife and I first got together, it's, you know, explaining that to someone that is not from a hunting family and understanding that you're going to be gone for chunks of time and that it's going to be part of your life. I don't care how poor I am, I'm always going to hunt. Like, I will always make it a priority because it's such a part of my life that I, like you said, with you think about it all the time, like, especially with Onyx now, and you can get on your computer and just go get lost in canyons and want to go check out stuff online, and, you know.
It's terrible. It's, like, it is. I saw on Instagram this guy was posting short clips of places in Oregon, like, with canyons over by, like, White Horse and those areas. To explore, and I'm like, man, I just want to go over there and check it out. I mean, I was talking the other day, I got a young kid I'm working with, you know, he's like in his 20s, and for the last couple of years, he, for a month, he goes over to Switzerland and France, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm like, man, how much of your own country have you seen? I haven't even seen the whole state in which I have lived my entire life.
Right.
You know, and so I was just like, Onyx is one of those things where it's like, what's that about?
Yeah,
I see something, you know, and I'm like, what's going on over here? I want to know, and I want to go just look at it.
And we have so much public land in Oregon. Like, we're so spoiled, we don't realize it, you know? And there's just so much to go explore, you know?
Yeah, and it's weird because I've lived in the valley, you know, my entire life. So here, it really, if this is your only experience with who owns what land, you would think that there isn't a lot of public land.
Yeah, it's all timber companies.
It's all timber companies. What looks like a forest that you can go in, you cannot, which is a changing thing. But once you get over the Cascades, you realize, oh my God, there is tons of, and it's kind of better country in a way.
Yeah, well, it's way more open. It's a lot easier to see game.
A lot easier to see game, even for hiking around. Like, I've been telling some of my friends, you want to get out more, just go hiking.
A little less rain, too.
Oh, dude, it's been terrible the last couple of days. I think we got 2 inches in a day last week. So.
Which we'll dive into pigeon hunting in a minute, but since you brought up hiking, I just finished this book, Surviving the Trail. And so this doctor wrote this book, and it's one of these falcon guides. So, you know, you've seen that format before. But he approached me and said, hey, you want to read my book and review it? And he's going to come on the show and talk to us about it. But he's very detailed in it. And he kind of gives little stories at the beginning about, and I don't want to give too much away, but just people that get themselves in trouble hiking and then how to prevent some of those tragedies from happening. I mean, his whole goal is to have less people harmed by something he loves to do.
Well, and we talked about it the other day that there was a local guy that perished. We spoke about that. He was from the town. He lived in the town that I'm from, and I kind of knew his sister a little bit. And he was an accomplished hunter.
Solo hunter,
like, in very accomplished from the looks of it. And he had an accident in which he fell. And we had talked about that a little bit. And here's a little interesting, like, he actually talks about compasses. I was trying to explain to my daughter. Again, she's 4, so it's kind of hard. Yeah. You know, there's a little bit of communication problem there. I have several of them, and I have one of the bronze ones, you know, you could buy for nothing. And I was trying to explain to a 4-year-old what it is, you know, and I was just like, so it works like this. And, you know, it became a car, like, real quick, you know, after that. And I was just like, not frustrated, but I was like, okay, she's this, not there yet. Cause she's 4, by the way.
And this guy talks about that in the book, how everybody relies on these electronic tools.
Sure.
But batteries can die, equipment can fail. You can drop your cell phone in the river. You know, stuff can happen.
Smash the screen.
Yeah. So, like, knowing how to use a compass is a skill set that I know when I first hunted, that's what my dad did. He would sit down with us and he'd show us the compass and where we were going and how to pick, you know, some landmark things and, you know, how to help yourself get back to camp. And
And I remember, you know, as a kid, my dad would spread maps out on the kitchen table and the guys from the neighborhood, because everyone hunted on our street, you know, and that's what they would do. And now...
that was their onyx. They were all drooling over the maps. Like, look at this topography.
Yeah. And now you can talk to, like, my nephews who are in their early 20s. They're like, they've never seen a map.
Yeah.
You know, it's just onyx now.
Did you guys use that to start the fire?
Sure. And I have... And you can look at... I kept some that were my dad's, like, from the 80s. And they're very different from some even from the mid-2000s. Like, the quality... They look like they're drawn with, like, a real thick crayon almost, you know? And there's, like, all these marks and, you know, I'm trying to, what was this? And he's like, you know, that was so long ago, I don't even remember.
Don't even know what it meant.
I don't even know what this means anymore, so you know? So I thought that was interesting.
The world changes so fast, just in our lifetime, it's unreal.
Oh, you got to think, like, we went from, just in our lifetime, no cell phones, to cell phones, to...
Internet. Internet came out when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. And then how cell phones were just for calling people.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're supercomputers.
Right, in our pocket.
With satellite imaging. Right. It's just kind of,
shooting
hard to,
video.
We're shooting video. It's hard to fathom a little bit, you know, because I talk to my nephews and about stuff and how things have changed, and it just, like, goes right over their head. This is all they've ever known is Onyx, really. Mm-hmm. And
which is an amazing tool. I mean, it is.
I like it.
I struggle with, I'm not as proficient with it as other people. I know guys that I can go out with it and they're just so good about knowing exactly where they are. And I don't always download my maps correctly. And, you know, I just get myself in trouble that way. But
yeah, and I kind of like to look at it in a, I was thinking about this the other day because one of my friends uses my account, and she was just talking to me about it because it's actually changed a lot since it's come out, like the things you can
They're always adding to it.
Always adding new stuff, which is cool. But I've been using it. I noticed, like, I want to go to this area, and then when I get there, I just don't use it because I want to see the area with my eyes. Like, I don't, like, spend so much time on it. I know where... every tree is almost, because some guys get they go through the whole, like,
but it's not always detail. What you think it's going to be a lot
oh,
of times
no I've
not.
Been surprised quite a few times where it's like, oh man, this from the topical view you think, man, this is going to be good hunting, and you get there and it's like a just choked hellhole of blackberry bushes, you know? And you're like, well, oh, this is terrible.
The other thing we've been curious about is with these changes that Oregon made to mule deer specifically, the elk units are staying the same, but mule deer is now going to be totally different units. is Onyx going to have to come out with like an overlay. We're going to have to turn on a toggle for mule deer habitat only or units only or whatever.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, because guys are going to get into, there's going to be a couple years where guys are going to be in the wrong spots.
Oh, totally. Because sure. They've hunted there their whole lives and all of a sudden they got half the unit, you know?
Yeah, I think a guy in his 60s too.
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't use that technology maybe.
Yeah. They're going to be like, I've been hunting here my whole life. What do you mean it's different? Even though ODFW has done a lot to try to get the word out.
Yeah, and they've done a pretty good job, I think, of that. You always got to be on your toes.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about some of those changes, but I want to dive into the pigeon hunting first. So right. Chris has been telling me for years about this pigeon hunting that he does.
How long? I was probably trying to think about it on the drive over here.
At least since I've known you, probably.
10 years?
I mean, yeah, probably 10 years. Maybe you didn't tell me right away, but maybe 6 or 7 years. So he was telling me about pigeon hunting and how they're hard to shoot and all these things. And it's really easy when you hear pigeon hunting to just yeah that, because we're all picturing those slow barn pigeons that are just flying around a barn and just making little cooing noises, or they're living under a bridge or whatever. And that's what I'm picturing in my head. But no, this was band-tailed pigeon hunting, and in Oregon, it's what, a 1 week season? Or
yeah, I think it's 8 days, 2 birds a day. So if you get a year where there are a lot of birds, which we haven't had in a couple of years, which is kind of good and bad, like for your, like you didn't get a lot of opportunity mm-hmm. when you went, but you killed birds, which is good. Mm-hmm. So if there are a ton of birds flying, I mean, it can be 20 minutes and you're done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can see that.
So now what I do is, if there are a lot of birds, I'll try to knock one out early, so at least I get one, and then I spend half the time, which we'll talk about, talking to the guys that are there. Because besides you and I, the next closest guy, he's like in his mid-60s.
Yeah. Well, and what was crazy about it, so Chris says, hey, this is the year. Do you want to go on the pigeon hunt? And he called, and I'm like, yes, absolutely. I was all excited. He told me what to go buy online. I think it was $2 for the band-tailed pigeon permit that you have to
pretty
have
cheap. That.
Yeah. And I don't know if you need just a hunting license and the permit, I believe is.
Yeah. And then you get the hip validation for free.
Right. With your sports pack.
With your sports pack. You already got that.
And so anyway, I go buy my stuff and I'm all excited and I have a 16 gauge and Chris has a ton around. So he's like, yeah, just, I got plenty of ammo. Don't worry about that. I think we met at your house because I didn't know where I was going. And so this is a private property that we were getting to hunt on. And these birds, they come flying in really hot along the river. And then they kind of swoop over you for a second as they're trying to get to these mineral springs. And I did a little research on the birds back then, and I should have refreshed my memory, but they actually see in color better than humans.
Yeah.
And so I did notice right away when we started seeing birds come in, as soon as you lift your gun on, they would start to turn their body and react, being ready to like dodge your shot. And it was like, whoa, I haven't seen a bird that does that. And they're the closest relative to the passenger pigeon, which mm-hmm. used to be everywhere. And
millions of birds got shot out.
Yeah, and people shot the daylights out of them. And they were bigger than the bandtails.
I think those went out. I mean, those went extinct, I think, in the 20s. Is that right? Something like that.
It was early 1900s. And, you know, they're very, genetically, these are the most similar bird to the passenger pigeon, which is just kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's like you're hunting this historic, and it looks like an oversized dove almost, you know, but then they have that distinctive black. You know, I mean, they're a lot bigger than a dove, but
16 inches about, I think.
Yeah, they're the biggest pigeon.
Yeah. I think they're generally like that, what you just talked about, how everyone thinks they're just some barn bird,
mm-hmm.
which those, I mean, they're like, they just stand still for you. And I really appreciated the look on your face when the first, because it's like they just appear.
Yeah.
They fly. They can dive up to 120 miles an hour, which is hard to fathom. But when you pull a shotgun, so you gotta like, they see in color better than humans, which is really cool little like factoid. But
they only have one chick a year, 1 to 2 chicks a year,
and mostly that's, one.
And that's why
it's like 1.2 or something.
That's why they only let us harvest such a small amount of them, because that population takes a long time to build back up.
So I guess let's start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So. It used to be for a month long, the season, and it was 8 birds a day. So now you can kind of see how we got to 8 days, 2 birds a day, because they didn't know a lot about them for a long time. And I think they need to kind of change the season days, like where we start. I think early September would be better for us.
Because we're hunting kind of towards the end of when they're coming in.
Yeah, and a lot of rain starts. Usually, you know, historically rain is happening around the 18th every year. And lately it's been coming earlier. So that will really shut it down.
Mm. The birds just don't like flying in
the
rain?
They just don't, you know, they coop or they roost, excuse me, like a lot of birds. In the rain, they'll roost. I've been going since I was a kid. My grandfather came over here into Oregon in the 60s. He probably started going in the late 60s, early 70s with Fred. We'll talk about Fred because he's a very interesting guy.
You can't not talk about him.
He's been going there the longest out of anyone I've ever met that's still living. And I, myself and my cousins, you know, we've been going since we were pretty young. And a lot of, for a long time, I never talked to people about it because it is private. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any public areas that you can go and hunt them. And, you know, when we went, there was six of us, seven of us. When I was a kid, it would be 40 people. Mm-hmm. It was actually quite popular.
And wasn't there a club or something?
There was a club. I don't remember what it was called. It was a rod and gun club that leased the property that we're on now. And on the other side of the river was also owned by the family. They have since sold it in the last 5 or 6 years. That was where the better hunting was, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I've heard there were hundreds of guys out there shooting them. And if you could imagine that.
Yeah.
It sounded like a battlefield.
Well, and that was the scary thing for me as we were talking about it is, you know, it is privately owned. There's an older gentleman that's still, you know, allowing everyone to come on. But what happens like with his, if his kids don't want to keep it going
that's
or they
want
to sell the property or, you know, I was telling Chris, like, it'd be awesome to secure that piece of ground somehow, you know, get a bunch of guys to pool together or something and acquire, hey, just sell us these 2 acres or 5 acres or whatever it is.
So it started with Ron, who owns the properties in his mid to late 70s. His dad, he did not hunt. He probably died. I don't know how long it's been since he passed. He lived into his 90s. But when he before he died, he had a thing with his sons, like, you let the pigeon hunting continue. Mm-hmm. Which I thought that was amazing. And it was two boys. I don't remember Ron's brother's name. He's since passed. Ron keeps it going. He doesn't hunt. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him down there shoot a bird, ever.
But he was checking in kind of how everybody was doing.
He always used to do that when I was a kid. Lately, I haven't seen him, you know, the last 5 or 10 years because he's getting up there. And but his son has no interest in letting us continue when he passes, which is kind of like, you know, that's why I wanted to get you out there because it's going to come to an end someday. Which is, you know, going to be a pretty big loss, I think, for us as hunters. But I, just to have you experience it for the first time, because I could tell that you thought it was going to be easy in a way. Because when I tell people what we're shooting, they just, they have no frame of reference besides a barn pigeon.
Well, what's funny too, is I brought a 16 gauge and these guys were looking at me like, kind of light on the gun. I'm like, it's a pigeon, you know, and they're all hunting with 12 gauges, but these birds are tough and you definitely need to get, you know, headshots because they were just very, very tough birds.
Also too, you can, so because they see color, you really actually, you don't need to wear camo, but you need to wear broken up earth tones, I think. And you don't need to be really fast up with your gun. If you notice, they always flare. I've never seen one not do it. So you bring that gun up real quick, they flare, and then that makes your shot almost impossible. And which the speed that they're coming at you at makes it tough too.
Yeah, and they're most head-on shots are mostly coming right towards you and flying over you real fast. The other thing, you know, I've hunted pheasants quite a bit in South Dakota. That was the other thing I did this fall. I went on that South Dakota pheasant trip, and I got to tell you, pheasants are a lot easier to shoot than these
pigeons.
They're
slow, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're slow and they're big. And, you know, I mean, if you're on the edge and you're trying to take long shots from escaping birds that got by all the other guns, those can be more challenging shots. But compared to these pigeons, when I was shooting the pheasants, I was like, wow, this is nothing.
Easy.
You know, it's so easy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these pigeons, for me, and I haven't done a lot of bird hunting, the most challenging bird I'd ever hunted.
Yeah, I tell people that and they just get this look on their face like there ain't no possible way that that is the truth.
Yeah. Well, we went 2 days and the first day I didn't hit a bird. And then the second day I got one right out of the gates and I was like finally on the board.
Happy.
Yeah, I was so happy too.
Finally, because you think that you hit them, and I think something happens when you're shooting. You're actually shooting way behind them because you're not used to the speed, and those loose feathers at the bottom of their body will come out just by the speed in which your lead is going by. You don't actually hit them when that happens. It's so close.
You're not getting any body.
You're not getting any body. That velocity,
grazing some feathers.
Yeah, and so you think, oh, I hit that bird. And it goes up in a tree. Well, it doesn't ever, you never did, you know? So you always got to, like what the old guys, you got to stone them. I mean, you got to kill them dead right away. And even sometimes if you do hit them pretty good, they'll get up into a tree and like, that's it. Like,
well, we had a couple that where we'd shoot them in the head and they'd still like twirl their way down. It was like,
well, they'll take off too. You think you got one good and they hit the ground and then they're up on their feet again. And part of the problem too is, I don't have a dog anymore. All the guys are so old, they don't have dogs anymore. So that's a little bit of it. There's a couple guys that will come a couple days a year. I didn't see one out there this year that have dogs. That's a tremendous help. I mean,
because it's blackberry.
Man, the blackberries are terrible down there. And so part of this is like pigeon hunting. If you notice, it's like the main thing we're there to do is shoot pigeons. And then the other part is looking at shotguns.
Oh,
do you notice that? Like,
yeah,
because some of the older guys, they've been collecting guns for so long.
I mean, that gun that Fred showed us, I don't know how valuable that thing was.
Very valuable.
But I'm thinking like a $20,000 gun or a $12,000 gun.
It's weird too, because there's guys down there, they haven't been lately, but where, and you know, you don't need a gun that's expensive. You can literally go buy the cheapest Mossberg and kill birds. There's guys who I see do it all the time. That has nothing to do with it. But there will be guys down there with like Perazzis and Krieghoffs and stuff that are in that $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, which is cool for me to look at because I have no interest in owning that.
But you get to touch it.
You get to touch it, yeah. You get to shoot one and kill a bird with it if you're lucky. So that's cool. And then, so part of the shotgun thing too is like you always get a history lesson. So they made so many of these. Which
yeah, and you
cool.
only want the ones made here.
You want these ones, and that's kind of cool. And then the underlying thing is that I've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years is trying to, I would, when my grandfather was alive, I would ask him stories, like just, hey, well, you know, when you did this, blah, blah, blah. He hunted all over North America, and I would secretly record him. With my phone. Yes, I got a couple of recordings. I want to get them cleaned up. Mostly about them hunting birds on reservations in the Midwest and stuff. And because that's where he's from, Iowa. And so I would secretly record him, which is super cool.
Yeah.
And then since he's passed, the only other guy is Fred. He's 81.
Yeah. I thought he was 71.
No, he's 81 years old.
So that's what it was. So he's been hunting it for 71 years because he's been hunting it since he was 10.
He was in Vietnam.
Yeah, he missed four. He said the only four pigeon seasons he missed was when he was in the military.
Yeah, he was in the Navy in Vietnam, did part of the shooting team.
So isn't that crazy? Like, you know, he's been going there for 71 years with that 4 year.
It's a tremendous amount
miss,
of time,
you know?
Like 67 years.
Yeah.
He would quit his job to go do it when he was a month. Like, and that's his thing. He goes out. It does not matter if it's pouring down rain. He goes every day.
And this guy, when I first get there, the first day, he's like looking me over, looking me up and down, thinks I'm like an undercover police officer.
Which is
or
the
something.
Strangest thing. Well, because back in the day, guys would be drinking. You gotta think.
Yeah,
he's been doing it since he's a kid. He's 81.
The season is. I mean, they're protecting these birds, so it is a fair paranoia of like, you know, you can only harvest two birds, and if like a guy's out there that's, you know, even you know, let's say one of those feather incidents, if a game warden's out there, they might say, oh, well, that counts.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And I don't know what the legalities are on that, but I think, I don't know.
I always went with it like,
to me, if a bird's not on the ground, it doesn't count, is how I've always thought. But
sure, and I've never talked to anyone about that.
No,
it's
I haven't
so
either.
A little amount of birds being killed. So they sell less than 1,000 permits a year, and they think 10% of the people that buy the permit actually go. So what is it, 90, 70 people? So we're not talking about a lot of birds here, but they are naturally suspicious of outsiders. I've only brought two people there, you and my childhood friend, which he doesn't go because he's busy, but they ask about him every year. But the first day, I'm getting interrogated.
Yeah.
Who the hell's this guy?
Yeah.
And which is funny because to me, I'm like, it's Sam, you know? Yeah. And, but the second day, they're like, hey, is your buddy here?
Yeah.
Because I think we missed a day in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, he'll be here tomorrow. And they're like, my uncle asks about you. Adam, when I ran into him, asked about you. Fred asked. And so it's once you kind of break that through that little wall of suspicion. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird thing to be suspicious of because no one's doing anything they're not supposed to do.
So, right.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just natural, I think.
I mean, I think so. Whenever someone's coming into your hunting spot that you don't know, that's a natural like defense mechanism, regardless of whether you think they're like going to arrest you or something. It's more just yeah. like, hey, I don't want this guy
in my
hunting
spot. Well, it's not just that. It's like there are people with guns.
Yeah.
And how you hunt it is like you're standing under a tree line or sitting, mm-hmm. if you're old, you sit, under a tree line and the birds are coming to you. Mm-hmm. And you don't know how responsible someone is with a firearm. No one has ever been injured there that I've ever heard, mm-hmm. which is quite amazing.
Oh, they're very proficient shooters, the guys that were there. And I would say for me, I felt really honored and privileged to be even able to go be in their spot. And I wanted to be, the other thing I really respected about how you do it, you go off to the edge, like you let those guys have the best spots.
Yeah.
Because once we sat by your uncle and Fred, and I saw how many more birds were flying over them. I'm like, holy cow, no wonder they're getting birds and we're not. But half the time they're like, mark, and then it flies over. Yeah. They haven't even pulled the trigger because they're talking about a gun or whatever.
They're always BSing about something. And that's part of it too. It's like, I'm when I was younger, I was a lot more serious about it. Now it's just a way for me. You know, so my grandfather's the one who took us there, us and my uncles. And, you know, he's passed a couple years ago, so that's part of the reason why we go. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a thing that I did with him.
Yeah.
And Fred and him were friends for 50 years, like real good friends. So I feel like I got to go and check out Fred.
Yeah.
See how he's doing. Also, too, the guy's 81. He's better at shooting than I am.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of like you watch him and you're like, man. But also, too, you got to think. He has three times as much time behind a gun as we do.
Yeah.
And he's a shell of what he was when I was a kid.
Well, he had some stories that he was telling us that were just the kind of stories that...
Yeah, we probably won't talk about it on the podcast.
Well, but the type of stories, though, that you can't, like, replicate. But, like, today's man is not that man.
No.
You know what I mean? They can't even relate to the stuff that he was telling us.
No, and he was very... like us too, I think, in a way. You know, he's from the Willamina area. I think he was born in Portland, if I remember right, but he came down and lived in Grand Ronde with his grandparents, and all they did was hunt and fish. Like, mm-hmm. that's how they ate. And besides the pigeon hunting, he was really into bears. And so him and I kind of have that thing where we talk about bear hunting a lot, because I really like hunting bears. But yeah, he can't, I mean, there's a lot of going in on horseback, Eastern Orient, those kinds of things that people don't really do much anymore. But also, too, he appreciates it in a way. So, like, one of my grandfathers alive, I had a picture of myself. We took a picture as my grandfather, myself, my uncle, and a cousin. Mm-hmm. And I didn't take one this year, but it's framed up, and we had a couple of them made for us. And Fred said so. He's like, why ain't I in a picture? I'm the one who brought you Haydens here in the first place. And I was like, I thought about that. And this last year would have been nice because we had some nice, really nice days. So I'm hoping he makes it another year so I can get a picture of us with him and so I can put that on my wall. Because, you know, he does have a point. Like, we wouldn't be doing it without him. Yeah. And they met, like, my grandfather and him met doing fabrication work. Back in the day.
Well, and his grandson came with him.
His grandson,
and he seemed like he loved it too. Just kinda.
Well, his son came. He lost his son some years back. He died pretty young, which is a tragedy for us because I've known him my whole life. And his son was a really good, like, very good at shooting too. And so his grandson goes, and kind of like the same reason why I went, you know. But it's a tremendous amount of fun. Mm-hmm. I like introducing someone to it because...
it's such a unique thing.
It's very unique.
It's just not something you're going
to... It's very similar to hunting waterfowl in a way because you're waiting for the birds to come to you. Mm-hmm. But there are no decoys, which I don't know why. You know, in Europe for pigeons, they use decoys. I don't know why we've never done that. Mm. I don't think it's ever crossed their mind.
Put it out in the middle of the field or something and see if you could...
Why not?
Yeah.
See, does that help? Because they're trying to get to that mineral spring in the river behind us.
And their eyesight's so good, you know they'd see them. You know,
I would.
You got decoys out there, so.
Yeah, yes. And it's weird too because it's like after you, you're like, man, maybe the 16 gauge isn't enough.
No, I'm going to take my dad's 12 gauge next year if I get to go.
Yeah.
The other thing that was cool about the birds is it's reddish meat. So like I got to take some home and cook them up and, you know, breast them out. Really tasty. I'll post a picture of it, you know, medium rare and just like
I salt really them, tasty. Soy sauce, make them with some rice or something, cream of mushroom soup type dish, or just eat them like that. My daughter's been eating them for a couple of years. I try to tell people it is kind of gamey.
Yeah, it's got a livery quality to it.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe because because I've been eating it for so long. But they eat a lot of elderberries.
Mm-hmm. Their crops were full of berries and nuts and seeds.
So they're eating some kind of very like good stuff. Mm-hmm. Also, too, they are a good-looking bird. Did you think that when after you killed one, you look at it, you're like, that's actually a pretty bird. Because at the back of their neck, they have the ring. Mm-hmm. And then up above that, it's like that kind of emeraldy green. I don't know how to explain that, but emeraldy green.
Purple. There's some purple hues in there.
Yeah, and each bird's a little different. Yeah. And then you get down to the tail where they're like a...
Some of them are almost pink and brown.
Yeah, like a slate gray. Mm-hmm. And then that light band on the tail. So they are a good looking bird. I think we took some pictures of them.
Yeah,
I have some pictures up on my Instagram from a couple years ago. And they're pretty sharp looking. I like them a lot.
Yeah, it was just such a unique thing. I was just, again, I just felt very grateful. So thank you for taking me.
Yeah,
I've
been trying to get more people to go because, you know, if we don't continue that, it will die out. And I've been looking for like 2 years to find some public land. Mm. I haven't had much luck with that. But I did talk to a guy, said that they are hunting them down east of Eugene.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's like on the middle fork of the land or where.
Maybe in Marcola area or something. Because I heard of a place like outside of Sweet Home where guys were doing the band-tailed pigeon thing. And it was again private and it was again Mineral Springs.
It's always Mineral Springs.
They found the Mineral Springs and
I heard
the birds come in.
It was kind of a like, okay, so the last couple of years not been very good. There are some years where you go down like not first thing in the morning, but like 11 and it's hundreds of birds. Mm. It's like you don't know which one to shoot. Mm. You know, you get kind of like sidetracked in
In that Mineral Spring, they were saying it's to make the baby milk or something.
Hunters and fishermen are liars sometimes. And it's for the mother's milk. And I was, as a kid, you just believe what anyone tells you.
But honestly, I think there might be some truth to it. Like I remember researching it just because I was like, do these really have this? Do they really fly this fast? Do they really? And all of it was
all
true.
All those things are
like,
true.
Like when I Googled it up, I think that one actually could even be true.
I think it's for eggshell development.
That makes more sense.
Scientifically makes more sense. I'm not a scientist, but I was always told that, and I told people that as an adult, and they look at you like you're an idiot. But it's fun. It's just like I'm just repeating the same lie they told me.
I'm going to have to look it up again because I do think there is a theory that the minerals do make the milk more nutritious. Because if you think about it, if you have one chick to take care of, and I don't know how many times they breed in a year. I don't remember.
I've heard that they can... Okay, so this bird flies from Canada to Mexico and back. They're getting shot basically in Mexico all the way up. And so I would think that if, like almost like coyotes in a way, if they get shot out, they start breeding again. I wonder if it's something like that because they say they can have up to two chicks a year. Mm. So, and they only have one at a time. Mm. So I would think like twice a year they're getting it done.
Yeah.
I don't know
how. Which is wild.
It's just different.
Then because those chicks have to survive all the predators and all that stuff, you know. It's
in California they did a study. It was like 17.8 rounds per bird killed. Mm. I'm like 3 because there's not a lot of opportunity.
Right,
you know?
And you're pretty good. I mean,
I just got a lot of practice.
Yeah, you were definitely a much better shooter than I was. You were getting the job done.
Faster, a little bit. Well, also, too, I knew what I was getting into.
And you
need to lead them a lot more than what you think.
Well, yeah, and I was also a little bit paranoid. I was a little bit like, wait, we better take advantage of birds because we had birds flying over while we were all just talking. And I was like, why aren't we shooting at these birds? Yeah. But then when you think about it, you can only get two. It's like, you got time.
I used to just knock them out real quick. And then you're like, well, I drove an hour. And
then you hang out.
Hang out with the old guys. And then if there are no dogs, you turn into the bird dog.
Yeah.
You know, my grandfather would be like, you're the best bird dog I ever had, Christopher.
And
you know,
just pat you on the head.
Yeah, give us crap. And, you know, back in the day, we went down to the river, which is quite cool, right?
Yeah.
So back in the day, we would come in on the other property and get down, basically go down on the other side of the river. So, you know, if you knock out your two birds real quick, you're chasing birds down in the river, mm-hmm. which can be, a lot of times it's low because we're just coming out of summer. You know, so there's a lot of that. Sometimes there's doves that come through, you know, which is cool. I try to knock one down if I can. But it's not for me now. It's not so much about killing birds. It's more about hanging out with the old timers. And,
oh, yeah.
And I don't know what it's, you know, hopefully I get to live into my 80s, but, you know, a guy like Fred, he doesn't have a lot of friends around anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it's weird too because sometimes he calls me by my dad's name because I look like him and I think he forgets.
Yeah.
Or he'll say Cliff, which is my grandfather, he's my dad. So he gets a little confused and stuff. But I like to, you know, check in on him.
But also that history is cool. I mean, that you have with him. And like, he had pigeon scroll work on one of his shotguns.
Oh, he's, yeah.
You know, he's showing us that. And I mean, this guy lives for the pigeon thing. And I get it. Like, I didn't get it until I experienced it. And then I was like, oh, I get why guys love this.
Yeah, you know? And it used to be, you know, you got to think he has seen it at its height. Mm-hmm. And now there was six of us.
Yeah.
And he was telling me guys used to come from Russia to kill one, which is weird. I just take him at his word for it. Mm-hmm. But my grandfather had some mounted in his house, which is like a weird thing, you know, because you're like elk, antelope, blacktail, whitetail, two pigeons on a stick, you know. And those were, and then he had like a pheasant.
Yeah.
And that was it.
With a super long tail or
it
something.
It was really, yeah, it was a really long one. I think it got destroyed like in a flood or something. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, he had it. And yeah, I have his whitetail from the 60s in Iowa. That's kind of cool. But so, I mean, a lot of it's just spending time with the old timers, getting stories out about it, you know. And for me, that's, yeah, this kind of stage of my life, that's like what's the most important to me, you know.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, you and I talked about this. So I'm going to kind of transition us over to what I call bad decisions, which is new guns.
Sure.
And which there aren't, that's just a joke because there is no bad decision when you buy a gun. But so Chris and I've never been a gun nut. You're more of a gun nut than me, for sure. And you really know your ballistics and you know your different calibers. But as of late, I've just kind of gotten the bug and I don't know necessarily why, but I started doing gun research on different things. And then I started thinking, well, I need to get some guns for my future grandchildren and for my son. And if my daughter wants one,
my daughter has a tremendous amount of firearms.
Yeah. So I just started like getting the bug and going to gun shows. And you know, the gun shows, it's so overwhelming because you see all this wood and it's all beautiful to me. I really like wood guns.
Yeah.
And, you kind of can't, but then if you decide to take one home, that speaks to you. Like you and I said, it's like, you've got to hold it up and be like, this is a gun I want to own,
sure.
You know, but you get it home and you really start admiring the beauty when it's not in the sea of all the other guns.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm kind of transitioning over to that is because Fred has a huge gun collection,
yes.
But he was talking to us on the river or on the, you know, in the field that, he's going to start selling off some of those guns.
Sure.
And you and I talked about this. There's a lot of older generation where their kids aren't into hunting or their kids aren't around, they don't want the guns, the kids don't really know the value. So these older guys are going, man, if I die, these kids are just gonna pawn these guns for next to nothing. So, you know, I have another customer that he's selling a big chunk of his gun collection. He's still keeping, you know, some family guns to hand down. But I purchased a 243 at a gun show fairly recently. And it's kind of a cool, I brought some guns to show Chris. My latest acquisitions are over here on the table. But
I like them all.
Yeah, but so this 243 that I picked up, it's a competitor to Seiko is what the guy told me. And this guy owned a pawn shop in Staten. Nice guy. So this gun is a little short 243. I have an affinity for 243s because it's what my dad always hunted with. So I think it's the perfect deer cartridge, especially for blacktail over here on the West Coast. And I love Leupold scopes. So I picked this up with an old Leupold on it. It's, you know, I pick up sight picture right away when I hold the gun up. It's short. It was a good price. But it was right at the end of the show, so I had to go to this guy's pawn shop to pick it up. Well, while I'm there, there's an old guy in a Tesla truck bringing in like 20 guns to this pawn shop. And I'm going, and there were some Sweet 16s and some different stuff, and I'm just going, man, I really want to go see, you know, how much he's going to get out of those. And obviously, you can't go to a guy's pawn shop and buy guns out from under him. That would be frowned upon.
Yeah, you'd never be able to go back.
But at the same time, I'm going, man, it's crazy to think that an old guy is just bringing in his guns and being done with them.
Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, going back to Fred, and like, he has a really cool, like a really cool gun collection, because a lot of old Winchester side-by-sides, which have not been made, I think, since the 50s, and they're highly valuable, and I would just love to have, like, he shot one this year. Like, so he was shooting a, could be a $20,000 shotgun, which is wild to me to bring that outside, you know, in that setting. It turned out when my grandfather passed, I had inherited a couple firearms, and then I had bought some from my uncle. And I bought a Model 12, which you have one, in 16 gauge. It's like 100 years old. I think mine's from the 50s, and mine's in 20 gauge. I bought a...
So I just brought that in. So my my father-in-law brought that for... he passed it on to my son, and we just picked it up like a couple weekends ago. But it's a... Yeah, it's a Model 12 Winchester pump action. He told me, he goes, that gun's almost 100 years old. And I'm like... Are you sure? Like, in my mind, I'm like going, did they do pumps that long ago?
Oh, they did, and, 1897.
Yeah,
Winchester.
So then I looked it up on serial number, and it, sure enough, it was manufactured in 1929. And I was like, holy cow. It's amazing that that technology was going back then, you know?
Oh, I mean, they had it during the Wild West almost, like towards the end of that time. So I have one in 20 gauge. Mine's like a lot nicer than that.
Yeah, in better shape, probably.
A lot better shape than that. But I like the way that looks because you don't need to worry about it. And then I bought a Browning Auto 5 hand-engraved Magnum 20, which is a little bit more rare gun. It needs to be gone through again because it's semi-auto from the 40s. It's like the innards are in terrible shape. But one of the other firearms I bought was a Ruger Model 77 and 25-06, and that was Fred's dad's rifle, he told me.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He said, what'd you buy? And I told him, he goes, that was my dad's.
Yeah, you guys were talking about maybe a trade.
And I said, I just told him, I go, do you want it back? Because I go, I'll give it to you, but when you die, it has to come to me or we can trade. And he just said, no, I have another one. And I was a little surprised by that. But he had that made for his dad.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which I thought that was really cool. Now I have it, you know?
Well, that's the thing with that 16 gauge from my father-in-law. So for my son, my father-in-law, he came on the podcast one time, but that's the gun he was carrying pheasant hunting when he got shot, you know? So when he got shot by another hunter, so there's some history with that gun. And I mean, I haven't shot it yet. He told me to go ahead and make sure I shoot it first before I let my son shoot it and make sure everything's working good.
Put a new butt pad on it.
Yeah. Get a little more
For your son. I know it looks like rubber, probably hard to steal.
Right yeah. Now. It's been worn down. So that same gun show, I picked up a little pistol. I picked up that single shot 20 gauge shotgun.
Can I talk about that?
Yes, please talk about that. Because you can pick it up.
Usually, single shot shotguns are in.
And I guess it has like a clip. So maybe it's more than a single shot, but it's a. What is it? A bolt action shotgun.
It's a bolt action. It's a Mossberg. So
it was $50.
$50.
And so I was like, I've never seen a gun at a gun show for $50. So I was just like, is this price right?
I have,
right?
But not one I would buy.
Right.
Because usually single shot shotguns are incredibly frowned upon here for bird hunting. No one uses them. You kind of get looked at a little funny. And they're always in terrible condition. When you said that this was it, I was generally surprised on how good the condition of it is. It has what's called a polychoke, which now everyone's screw-in chokes. Mm-hmm. So polychokes were one that was just fitted onto the end of the barrel, and you could turn it by hand to go from full modified to cylinder. And they have different versions of it. But I was, like, surprised on the condition of this thing. It does have a clip. I honestly think you should be using this for hunting deer. Mm. That's kind of like what I think I see in this.
You don't think a grouse killer?
Oh, no, it will kill a grouse for sure.
Just a 20 gauge.
The stock on it's beautiful. I was very surprised.
I thought
they're usually trash, man. I'm telling you, like, you could use it for a boat paddle. That's like the condition that you see them in. Not as nice as this, but look at little finger grooves right
here. Yeah, the finger grooves are kind of cool. I just thought it was kind of cool. I mean, when I told you about it, you're like, oh, those are cheap because no one wants them. Like, literally,
I would have bought this. And I was at that same gun show the day before.
Yeah.
I was looking at, we've talked about this quite a bit because you like the wood and steel like me. I was looking at Anschutz, which is they make mostly 22s. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of the Olympic rifles.
Oh, yeah, that's some beautiful ones there.
We'll do part of our little transition into the grouse hunting because you did something that I did also, which after you went pigeon hunting for 2 days, you're like, I need to get another shotgun. I need something for this. Right. Cause yeah. we've talked about a bunch, like when we start a new hobby, we have a million hobbies that we do like half ass at. Right?
Right.
But I need the gear for it. So you did it with the shotgun and we did the grouse hunting. So that next day I was at the gun show, like I need a 22.
Yeah.
And I found that Anschutz. I didn't pull the trigger on it, but there was another guy looking at it too. And I said, you should pick this up. And he said, I actually have one. It was my dad's. And I go, these are nice guns. He's like, yeah. He's like, I don't like the modern guns too much. It was basically the slightly more expensive than a Ruger 10/22, which the prices on those have just gone up so much.
Yeah. Like, and the modern guns, my cousin Chris calls them creep guns.
Sure.
So because, and I mean, it's just kind of a joke. He's like, oh, Sam borrows creep gun. But I mean, there is something about holding a wooden gun versus holding a gun made out of plastic or polymer or rubber.
They just don't have any soul to them, right? They're just like, I don't know. And
I like the idea of durability. You don't have to baby it. You don't have to worry about scratching it or dinging it because it's a hunk of plastic. Yeah, and it's, I mean, you could probably melt it in the fire.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess wood burns pretty good too. But
pretty fast.
But it's one of those things where it's just like the beauty of the wooden gun. You just can't replicate it for me.
And two pieces of wood are the same.
Yeah. And even like the ballistics. So I also picked up a 300 Weatherby. And this was my cousin's hunt with these guns. I wasn't sure about it. I wasn't sure if it was something I wanted to invest in. But this was a custom gun that went to the Weatherby custom shop. It's got scroll work on the bottom. You know, just beautiful gun. It's, you know, it's been hunted with. It's got some dings and some bumps along the way. Nothing terrible. But I was just like, okay, there's a reason why my cousins love these so much. And like once you hold a Weatherby and you work the action and you look, like they're just built for quality.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just a different type of firearm. And, you know, you look at the ballistics on the 300 Weatherby, at 500 yards, it drops 15 inches. I mean, it's a flat shooting gun.
It's very flat shooting. And now, like, I have passed on a lot of 300 Weatherbys that, looking back, I was like, man, and made by different manufacturers because Remington picked them up in their 700 Classic line. And I think Winchester's made, I mean, a bunch of people have made them. I always passed on them because I thought, man, they're just, they kick too much. But I was shooting a 300 Win Mag back then, which is not, slightly more pressure.
That was my thing too. I was like, ballistically, I don't need a cannon. I don't need a...
But talk about a killer though. This thing's a laser beam.
And a box of ammo is $100. I mean, they're an expensive gun to shoot. But where I started thinking, so I've been hunting with the 6.5 PRC and I like it ballistically. I really liked it on paper and I shoot it well at the range and it's harvested now 3 animals. And all of them have died with one bullet. But this year, my shooting woes continued a little bit. I could have... So where I messed up is I started that, and I talk about it, and I did a little YouTube. I did a couple little YouTubes recently. I'm dabbling in that space. And I talked about my woes with this gun. And so my son shot it last year, and he complained about how loud it was. And my dad calls it Thunderstick because it was really loud with the muzzle brake on it. And it had this kind of gray rubberized stock that Bergara comes stock with, no cheek plate. Liked this, the feel of the stock, and that was one of the reasons I was attracted to the gun. But it would jam after the first round. And so my son was having trouble loading it. So I swapped it to this MDT stock, which I just got a Christmas card from MDT, which I thought was kind of cool. They sign it, everybody at the company, which is kind of a neat thing. And I like their stock. So I swapped it over to their stock, but it had a more plastic polymer feel than the rubber. But it would hold a magazine. So now I've got a 10 round and a 3 round magazine for it, which I thought was a good change. But I also added a suppressor.
Oh, really?
Which added 4 to 5 inches to the end of the gun.
Sure.
So now I've got this long gun that is no longer really balanced that well. Well, my buck this year was in his bed at 25 yards. And I'm trying to get in on him on a steep angle at a canyon with shooting sticks with this heavy gun. I wasn't sure I wanted to shoot him yet because wasn't sure if I wanted to hold on or not. Well, anyway, I took long enough. I decided to take one more step and he bolts. So then he's at like 400 on a run, and that's when I decided to pull the trigger. And he would not stop. We were yelling and screaming and trying to get him to stop. I missed the first round, hit him with the second round. And then this is where I was really dumb because the deer went another probably 100 yards. I wasn't thinking about that. And I fired the remaining 4 rounds within 15 seconds and did not connect once.
Wow.
So the deer went down.
That's terrible.
It was terrible. It was yeah. horrible shooting.
Yeah.
It was not something I'm proud of. But sure. the deer went down, but he was not dying quickly, and I didn't want him to suffer.
Sure.
And so I walked back to the truck to get more ammo. By the time I got back, he had expired. But I left my cousin with him to watch him.
Yeah.
You know, but it was not... I wasn't a proud moment, and that was just bad shooting. I can't really blame the gun for that.
Yeah.
But the modifications to the gun are what made that a more difficult situation. If I would have had a little 243, I could have shot that deer in his bed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think the suppressor, it's going to become a lot easier to buy suppressors, so that's going to change how these guns shoot a little bit. I'm so like apprehensive to shoot a running animal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm terrible at it. I've shot one my whole life, mm-hmm. and I connect. It was a very short shot on a blacktail going uphill in a draw that a creek runs through in the valley. And I actually only shot it because I was hunting with my friend and his two boys. And I said, shoot him. I'm like, he's at like 50 yards. I go, just shoot him. Mm-hmm. And he shot and he missed and he started running uphill. Mm-hmm. And that's when I shot him, and it killed him like right away, which I was very surprised because I lost him right behind a tree, and I'm like, I think here. Mm-hmm. And that's when I pulled the trigger, and it connected.
Yeah,
and he rolled down into the creek. But that's the only running deer I've ever shot, and it was with a really short rifle too, that Tika I have. Mm-hmm. So it's like a 22 inch barrel, real tiny for hunting in the West.
We've always got him to stop. You know, we give a little hoot or a little scream. This deer did not.
That was taken off, huh?
Yeah, he just didn't want to stop. So in my mind, I was like, okay, I'll fire the first round and maybe that'll stop him.
Sure.
It was what I was thinking. And it did slow him enough for me to be able to connect on the second one, but he was still like moving, which wasn't an ideal shot by any means. 400
yards, man, yeah. That's a stretch.
Yeah, it wasn't smart, honestly. Like if I had to do it over, I wouldn't have done it.
You just would never have pulled the trigger, huh?
No, but I mean, I was happy to harvest the animal and he did die. It wasn't my best shooting moment.
Hindsight, right?
And, oh yeah. But that's what, it made me rethink that whole gun. I'm like, okay, I'm taking the suppressor off. I'm going to just put a thread cap and take the muzzle brake off because 6.5 PRC is not going to kick that bad anyway.
No.
And then I don't have that noise factor going. I am going to stick with the stock the MDT stock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but we're planning a Snake River elk hunt for 2026, and I have 16 elk points, which puts me in no man's land.
Yeah.
So it's like Snake River or Ochocos is 9 points. And then you're in no man's land until the big bull tags, the Winnehaw and the Mount Emily.
Which are in the 20s.
24 now.
When and with point creep, by the time you get there, it's going to be in the 30s.
That's where I got with it. It's like, okay, I'm 46 now.
If
let's say point creep even just goes to 26 points.
Yeah.
So 10 years from now, I'm 56, trying to hunt Winnehaw and Mount Emily. My brother and I were doing it together, so I'm like, hey, you just keep going for that, and I'll go with you. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to burn my points and just because I want to start elk hunting again. And we're looking into the Snake River trip, which I'm excited about. We're talking about like a bottom-up approach and having like a jet boat guy take us in, set up camp,
sure,
kind of hunt our way up, and then if we get an animal, you're bringing it down the mountain kind of thing. So
yeah, I think you got to – I had a friend that was in a similar situation. He drew a antelope tag with 19, mm-hmm. but he only bought points until he put in for the 19th
right.
one. And I told him, I'm like, man, it's 12, probably mm-hmm. 13 now. Back then it was 12. And I said, you should have just been putting in for the actual tag at 12.
Yeah.
And maybe got one at 12
right.
or 15. And then you'd already have four. You'd be on
to on the next.
Next.
That's
one.
Where I messed up too.
Yeah.
Like we were going to do Ochoco elk and we drew the tag. My wife had a heart transplant. We couldn't go.
Poor timing.
Yeah. I called ODFW and said, hey, and they gave me my points back.
They're
which
really
was
good
cool.
about that. That's my one thing I will never complain about ODFW. I don't like the whole, it's like fish and wildlife thing. I think it needs to be fish and game, but they are really, they're really good about like just working with you. I gave a muzzleloader elk tag back.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I just cannot go.
Yeah. And if you have a reasonable reason, they will give you your points back. Like my dad had a stroke and we were supposed to go on a spring bear hunt with my son and we obviously weren't going to go. And they gave him his points back too, which was cool.
That's nice.
You know, it's because he's a kid and he was, you know, he was all excited and we didn't go.
Yeah.
So, you know, speaking of ODFW, there's some changes coming that, you know, people are never happy about any change, but especially when we're talking pocketbook. So the sports pack, which covers your hunting, fishing, all your tags, your predator tags, has been $196.50 for quite a while now. Like it went, it was in the 180 price range for a while, and then it went up to this 196.50. They kept it slightly under $200. And so that's what most of us buy, because when you do the math on it, you know, you add one little extra thing besides deer and elk and it's going to pay for itself. And so ODFW has proposed some changes. I mean, they're going to happen. So in 2026, the sports pack is going to go up from $196.50 to $253, which is a 28% increase.
Huge.
Which is pretty dramatic in a time where, you know, the economy is such that people are stretched thin. And now you add another, you know, $60 roughly to something that people have been buying for a long time. And the way I looked at it, here's what I don't like about it. And I'm sure that they did a lot of analytics before they just did this, because they're trying to get their budgets in order and whatnot. But what I don't like about it is when you buy a sports pack, it automatically gives you a cougar tag and a bear tag. And a lot of us, I mean, you're a bear hunter, but most hunters are deer and elk hunters. Sports pack forced us to have those predator tags in our pockets. Now, I've never killed a predator, but if I saw one, I would shoot it, you know? And we have a predator problem in the state. ODFW knows it. Everyone knows it.
We just talked about it, I think, a while ago.
Yeah, we talked about the cougars and some of these things that might be coming down the pike. And it's the number one issue for mule deer, in my opinion, is cougar predation. And then bears are probably right behind that.
Sure.
And so what I love about the sports pack is at least it has those tags out in the field. Now, next year, because I am planning this Snake River hunt, and we're going to do probably a spring bear hunt over there just to check out the country, I'm going to buy a sports pack, because if you do the math, it makes sense. But let's just say the following year, I'm a guy, I love fishing, but I don't have to fish. I'm more of a hunter. I've just transitioned that direction. And if I want to fish, I can fish in a private lake without having to have a license. And so anyway, next year, 2027, after 2026, so let's fast forward to 2027. Let's say I decide I'm not going to fish. I could just go buy my hunting license, my deer tag, because I'm not really an elk hunter. And that would be $126.
Which is so much money.
But compared to, so I'm saving $70 from the $196 I was paying to ODFW. So they're losing $70 out of the budget from a guy like me who's cheap and is going, okay, I don't need to have a fishing license this year. I don't need an elk tag. I don't necessarily hunt that stuff, but I hunt it when I have a sports pack, you know? And I think that's where they're going to miss the boat a little bit. We'll see how it actually plays out. But, you know, hunting licenses went from $34.50 to $39. That was a 13% increase. Fishing from $44 to $50, that was a 13% increase. So, you know, the biggest increase on a single item, actually the single item was the salmon steelhead tag. Went from $46 to $69.
I know.
That's a 50% increase.
I saw that and I was like, God.
So that was the number one item. And then the number two item was the sports pack, that 28%. And so the other thing that's frustrating about this is it's a step up change. So every 2 years, there's going to be another bump. So 2028, sports pack's going up another almost 12%.
So here's the question though, does that ever stop or is that forever?
Well, they only put it, you know, they only charted us out till 2030. So in 2028, that sports pack's going from 253 to 283. And then in 2030, it's going to $311.
That's crazy.
Another 9% or 10%. So the total increase over that time period for the sports pack is 58%.
That's
over the next 4 years. And if you look at the salmon tag, it's going all the way up to $77 in 2030, and that's a 67% increase.
I've bought one every single year since I was 18. I bought a salmon tag.
And it's and now our tag is salmon, steelhead, halibut. You know, it's got everything on one tag.
But it's, what is it? It's 10 native slots.
Right, yep.
So it's 10
you have
fish.
10 fish, and you can buy a hatchery tag,
you
a secondary tag.
You can buy as many hatchery tags as you want. I've gone through quite a few, but we're talking about the price increase, so... This synopsis I have from 1968. Hunter's license, resident hunter's license was $4. And in 1969, it went up to $5. So, you know, they were talking about the same thing. And I think a lot of the problem, too, is like hunting and fishing has not gotten better here.
Right. If anything, it's gotten worse.
It's gotten worse. You know, the mule deer population is definitely struggling. I don't do a lot of that, so it doesn't affect me, but it affects everyone else I know. And I think the state's unwillingness to recognize, I guess now maybe it's not a, there are people who are in the state government that recognize that the predators are a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And which we've talked about. Nash, I think, is his name.
Yeah, Senator Nash.
Senator Nash has been pushing that forward, which we greatly appreciate. But there are a lot of other people who have an unwillingness, I think, to accept that there's a problem and that we need to find a solution. And I just really think the solution is we need to just bring hunting predators back with dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, even for a short while to knock that population back, because I think humans are incredibly impatient. We want now, like, this is what we want. And so that creates a problem in its own. But until that the population of predators is knocked back, especially cougars, which we've talked about, I mean, they hammer the deer populations.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. It seems like it's number one thing,
hands down.
When, like, you see the actual numbers on what they, how often that they're killing something, it seems like it's made up.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like, oh, there's no way that they could be possibly killing that much, but it's true. So I think that's a big part of it. And look, they're changing the price no matter what. So
yeah,
there's nothing we can do about that, I don't think.
There's not, but I think guys are going to think like I am, and that's where I think they could bite them. I think guys are going to be like, okay, well, I don't need all this extra stuff. I'm just going to buy a basic hunting license and a deer tag, or if they're an elk hunter, just a basic hunting license and an elk tag. And that's actually going to, I think, potentially could decrease the revenues that ODFW
has. The last 2 years, I think I didn't buy a sports pack. I bought one since I was 18. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, 19 years I bought a sports pack in a row. And even if I never had any intentions of going that year, like, I'm too busy, whatever, you know, gone, I still bought one in case I came back, or like, hey, here's some money type thing. But this year I just bought a hunting license, a deer, and a bear tag. Mm-hmm. And then I bought the salmon and steelhead because I love that. I mean, that's really my fishing wise. You know, I like going to the lake and catching trout too, just like anyone else. But the salmon, winter steelhead's like one of my favorite things to do.
And that's the thing. I mean, right now it should be going on, but the rivers are all blown out. But honestly, the last couple of years hasn't been very good.
Oh, no, it's been terrible. One thing I'm really kind of happy about, that they knocked out those dams down south, and there's salmon back after a century. So that's promising that the salmon will come back.
Yeah, the salmon fishing has been good, and honestly, like, the coho are going strong. So this year was just a bumper coho year. Yeah. So I got to go out one time with my buddy Brent, who's been on the show a few times, and Jay Yellis, and they fish together all the time. And those guys, just, Jay was a pro bass fisherman, but now that he's out of that space, he loves to catch salmon and steelhead.
Which that's cool to see the transition.
Oh, yeah, that's his thing. And so, but they do this jig twitch fishing. Like the
coho, yeah.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of it.
And I'd never done it. And so we go out there, and everybody else is trolling. And Jay hooks a fish right away. And you could keep one silver. So we were each trying to get one in the boat so we could keep fishing for Chinooks.
Yeah.
And so anyway, then Brent hooks this fish, hands me the rod, just he's messing with the boat. And he's like, hey, you reel it in, you can tag the next silver. And I'm like, I don't think this is a silver. It was like ripping line and like, and you're fishing pretty light gear. And sure enough, we net it and it's a Chinook. And so I ended up getting, that was awesome. And then we got one more silver on the jigging. And then we picked up the third silver with like egg and bobber kind of thing. But we had four fish in the boat and the trolling guys hadn't done anything, you know?
I think Jay likes that so much because it's so bass fishing adjacent.
Yes.
It's very similar to what he's been doing. So I think that made it easy transition, and it's a much bigger fish.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember we, so my cousin's a guide, and a couple of us went out on his boat, and we had a guy who didn't do a lot of fishing, and he was like, what's it look like for a Chinook? Like, right as he's saying it, the rod right behind him is, I mean, it's a dumping line.
Yeah.
And my cousin goes, just like that. And it's ripping so hard, he couldn't barely get it out of the rod holder.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like, I think, I mean, that, just hearing that peel off and getting it, and you're feeling that power of that fish. It's so much fun. And that gets a lot of guys into Chinook fishing, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, salmon and steelhead fishing, I love it, but I just haven't made time for it the last few years. And I've been more focused on hunting. Yeah. And so, but there's going to be guys opposite of me that are going to be more focused on fishing. So they're going to be like, I don't need the sports pack anymore. I'm just going to get a fishing license and a salmon steelhead tag.
I'd be very interested to see what the next couple years, how it turns out. Maybe the first year it doesn't affect it, but when you see a sports pack $300,
yeah,
and it's not getting better,
yeah,
you know, if things really start turning around, and I don't know how they are going to turn around in 5 years, but people would be okay with it.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
But also, like, the pricing thing for me, you're pushing people to a place where they can almost go out of state for the same money and have potentially more opportunities.
But also too,
at least in the hunting space.
I was thinking about that too, but there are states now. I did some reading recently, and there are states that are reducing the number of out-of-state tags, jacking the prices up because, you know, their whole thought is if people are going to come here anyway, why not get more money out of them?
Right.
Which is fine. I understand that aspect of it for sure. But yeah, we're in definitely a weird spot, you know?
Well, yeah, you look at Idaho and they just went to the controlled hunt process where you have to apply, I think, this month.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas it was like open season, and I think their resident hunters were like, hey, we're tired of license plates from everywhere else being in our neck of the woods. And so now, I mean, obviously it was a huge revenue generator, but I mean, I went on that 1 year and I want to say like the elk tag was maybe $600 and the mule deer tag was maybe $300. So you're in about $1,000, but the numbers of animals over there compared to what we've got is just unreal.
Well,
I mean,
the elk herds
are huge.
Yeah, I complained about that too. Like when we're in Central Oregon, I'm like fishing. I see some guy, you know, with a license plate from somewhere where I'm like, what are you doing here?
Right.
And then I just got to take a step back and realize, you know, these are for everybody.
Yeah.
We just bogart it so much.
Like, oh, yeah.
I want you here, you know.
Right.
You know, and you just got to realize like, you know, it's not just for me. It's not my deer type thing.
Yeah.
And I hope that Alaska doesn't jack up their prices too much, because we talked about going to Alaska.
Doing a moose hunt,
and the tag's like $800. And we're like really doing the math. I'm like, wow, this is actually.
Well, we found an outfit where it was you stay at their lodge for $300 a day, and they recommend like a 10-day stay. So you're like,
of course they do.
But you're like $3,000 in, but they give you the boat, and basically you just go hunt your own moose.
Hunt the river system.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, wow, that's really. I mean, I feel like by the time we're done, we're going to be like $5,000-$6,000 in. Mm-hmm. Plane tickets, getting the meat back.
True.
And I was thinking about it the other day because my wife asked me, like, hey, when do you guys plan on doing that? And I said, well, in February, if that guy's there again, okay, I'm going to give it a real
get more serious about it a little bit. Yeah.
But then I was thinking, I'm like, golly, man, we really only need one moose tag between the two of us.
True. That'd be plenty.
I was trying to talk my cousin into going too, and like saying, hey, man, I'll pick up your plane ticket and part of your stay because there's no one I trust more running a boat than him. Well, especially places we've never been.
Oh, yeah. And I don't have that much boating experience. And once you get the moose on the ground, then you can focus on fishing. You know? And I mean, you turn it into a fishing trip, too. You bring home a bunch of salmon. So.
A small one is still going to be more meat than three families really need.
Oh, that's true.
You know?
Yeah. And there's something about that. The older I get, it's more about the adventure than pulling the trigger. And where when I was a kid, I was just like always had to pull the trigger. Geez. But now as an adult, like even hunting with my son last year versus harvesting a deer myself this year, I enjoy hunting no matter what, but seeing it through his eyes and having him experience it was more fun for me.
Man, that smile on someone's face.
Yeah.
Just like it. And you know, it's strange to say, I got a little bit of that with you.
On the pigeon hunt.
Because it's like, man, I've been telling my friend about this.
Yeah.
First of all, he didn't believe me.
Yeah.
Now he's here. He's having a good time.
Oh man, I loved it.
It was, you know, and you get, and the inverse of that is when, I don't know how long it was after that we did the grouse thing.
Yeah, not very long.
We did a week or two.
Yeah.
And it's like you were looking for a shotgun for pigeon hunting. And then I was looking, I'm like, man, I have a 22, a couple of them, but I was like, kind of need a nice one.
Yeah, because you can legally kill, you know, grouse with a 22.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always do like a single shot type setup.
Yeah.
And, you know, you head shoot them. You're not wasting any meat.
I didn't head shoot a single one. Yeah. Very hard to shoot a little bobbin bird at 60 yards or 100 yards. Cause I thought, oh, you're like, there's one. And I'm like, oh, I, for sure. Yeah. I'm a good shot.
Yeah.
This is what I'm thinking. You know, and I was talking to my buddies about it. He's like, how'd it go? And I'm like, man, those things. Every time I just get right, like, okay, now he'd bob his head down. I'm like, yeah. Head down, bob his head up. And I'm like, will you just stand still?
Yeah, they're always moving that
head. They're always moving
that head. You almost got to go almost like neckish.
Yeah.
You know, give yourself a little more.
This was my first time I had to get over. Now, it wasn't like buck fever.
Right.
But just like, oh my God, there is one. It was real quick. We kind of got lost in the hills a little bit because it's been some time.
Yeah.
And you did the thing that I've done to people where you're like, yeah, we go up here. And then you're like, I haven't been here in a while. And I was like, oh, right. Great, cool.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, and I've done that too. You
drive
know?
Around in circles drive for around. A little bit.
But we found it.
Yeah.
We found the spot. And I think maybe we might have found a good bantail spot. I'm going to go back early on and
check. Yeah, we saw some pigeons up there.
Pigeons up there. We saw a deer, a big, beautiful doe.
It was a good day, and
the
weather was good, and we didn't bring
beautiful.
Home any grouse, but
yeah. But we
the other thing that's nice. Sometimes you can find some mushrooms too up there. You know, if you time it right with the weather, and the mushrooms weren't out yet.
I've never picked mushrooms. But I have a lot of apprehensions.
Chanterelles,
I have some friends, Russian friends that do it quite a bit. And they're they've been doing it for generations. They're experts at it. But I thought it was cool too because we got a couple shots. We didn't hit any. It is the first one that we saw, I was like, man, that bird is tiny. Mm. But then you're like, no, that is just a small bird. And then later on we saw some that are like, wow, that's actually a good sized bird.
Mm.
And they are really cool looking. But we ran into that guy that was driving through. I was thinking about this and he's like, what are you guys doing? We're like, oh, grouse hunting. He goes, huh? He's like, I don't like the way they taste. And he's like, I'm going camping. And he just drove off.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
Yeah.
It was just a weird
one. Wow, out in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle. We didn't see another person, I don't think,
no.
the whole time.
And it's, I don't know, any day in the woods is a good day.
That's what
and
I look at
it. It's, there's so many different things that you can do. And it's kind of nice to add just another, I've never thought about doing that. You know, and you and I talked about it'd be cool. And I don't know if it's how practical it is, but to just try to harvest every species we could get in the state, you know, as far as like in the game bird space. And, you know, you'd have to put in for your sage grouse permit and stuff like that.
It's going to be hard. I think the sage grouse is going to be a tough one because it is a permit system. They don't give out too many of them. The other one that I did get, and it's the first waterfowl I ever killed, was a Wilson snipe.
Oh.
They're really tiny. They kind of look like a woodcock.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first waterfowl I ever killed. I'm not going to count it though,
because
I killed it by chance.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
You weren't intentionally targeting that species.
No, it was actually the first time I went duck hunting ever. I never did that in my youth. And we're out on some private land. And I just shot it, man. I just shot this poor bird. And the guy I was hunting with, we called him Nacho. He goes, wow, dude, that's rare. And I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to shoot. I was allowed to shoot this thing. It just caught me off guard because it came in like a duck.
Yeah.
You know, it came right like that. And I just by chance, I shot it. And he's like, that's a snipe, man. That's really like rare.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they're mostly out on the coast. So this far inland, it was kind of rare. And I gave it, my friend ate it. And he's like, yeah, it was a little different. And I got a couple ducks under, you know, I have a wood duck. I have a pintail.
See, I've never duck hunted.
We're going to go.
I need to go out.
We talked to one of the guys at pigeon hunting. He has a lease here. I ran into him 2 weeks ago. He said it's been terrible because the weather's been too nice. Now we're getting rain. He's hoping. You know,
how long does the season go?
Into next year.
Oh, okay, so we got some time.
We do have some time, yeah. Now that we're getting rained, I think he's seen like 20 or 30 birds a day instead of 300, you know? And I've talked to other people and they said it's been pretty, pretty slow. And a lot of the weather up north really affects driving birds down from what I've been told. And I told him like, hey, Sam and I don't care if there's birds. I'm like, I'll bring some snacks. We'll just hang out in the blind and shoot the shit a little bit.
And 20 to 30 birds, I'm still going to be happy. Like even you guys kept saying how slow the pigeon was. And I was like, we got plenty of stuff to shoot at. I'm happy.
Well, sure, there is plenty of stuff to shoot at, but I mean, I just want you to go and see it. Like,
see it when it's full glory.
Yeah, because it's.
We should just go preseason when they're flying like crazy just to check them out.
We used to go down there, and do mow the ground, do a little bit of upkeep for Ron. But back in the day, like...
We should do that, and we should sit down and talk to him and be like, okay, what's your transition plan?
I know.
We need to figure this out.
Yeah, and it's just like, I want to keep it going, but back in the day, I mean, it was still when it was two birds, sometimes you pull the trigger and three go down. So then you're in this weird spot, like, you know. No one had ever, like, a lot of guys just self-reported, and they're just like, okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people are like, it's a pigeon. Mm. Like, even at ODFW, because they didn't really recognize that it was a game bird, what we were talking about. So there's that weird in-between. But I'm really stoked. Like, after that day we went grouse hunting, I called a couple of my buddies. I go, hey, man, we should get into this.
Yeah.
It's just something to do.
There's a lot of grouse. And a lot of people, you know, they just bring a small gun with them, like that 20-gauge I got or a 22. And you're, you know, you're mushroom hunting or deer hunting. You're doing something different. But then you happen to run into some grouse and you can harvest them.
I want to eat one.
Yeah, I think they're really tasty. I was surprised that guy didn't care for them. They're white meat, though, instead of like the red meat, like pigeons. Yeah.
Yeah, the pigeon's more livery deer tasting. Mm-hmm.
And they're more like chicken,
you know. Look, I love chicken.
Yeah, I mean, and they call them, I don't know, prairie chicken or something like that. But like a lot of times you'll see them on the road and they're picking up little pieces of gravel to put in their, you know, gizzard or whatever. Yeah. And
they're not a very intelligent bird, no, from the sound.
They're still hard to kill, though. That's the hard part. Well, I mean, they're not like a pigeon that's flying in super fast.
Because they're jittery.
Yeah. Like you said, the head bobbing.
They're never standing still. And we drove them up, and there was that one set of the bigger birds later on in the day, right before we ran into that guy, that we drove them up in a tree. And let me tell you, you will not find them in a tree.
They're so hard to see.
They are. I'm like, but that's the best, right there.
That's the best way to get them, though, is when they're in the tree.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's right there in that tree, and I have binos. And I'm telling you, you cannot, unless you get it to move, you will not find that bird.
Yeah, they're perfectly camouflaged up against the tree.
Very like... Yeah. I did not take my eyes off him. I grabbed the binos and I'm looking and I'm like, he's gone.
Yeah.
He like disappears.
The only thing we ran into was ruffed grouse, but if you run into the blues, they do stick out a little better just because of their color. Sure. You know, that bluish gray kind of color.
It's like kind of like they disappear, and it's like I was telling you about the pigeons. It's like a video game, man. They just render.
Yeah.
They're here all of a sudden.
That's true. You did say that. Like this poof. Here they are.
There's a bird.
Yeah.
And they come up so secret along that river and they just pop over.
It's like the old Nintendo where that dog comes out and laughs at you. That could have been me that day.
Yeah.
You know, the dog was just like, dude, just like this guy thinks he's going to hit these things with a 16 gauge.
Well, I killed that one down there. It was just standing on a rock on the river. And I'm like, give me your, I didn't bring my rifle.
You thought maybe it was hurt or something.
I think maybe it got clipped.
Mm-hmm.
One of the old guys shot it or who knows what. And it didn't, a lot of birds will startle and I get up, but it didn't move and I didn't bring my shotgun. I was like, give me your shotgun. And I kind of like, it was like.
That bird wasn't getting away.
It was like 7 yards, but it blew the hell out of it. Yeah. Poor bird, you know? And then I realized your shotgun is so light. It's not very comfortable to shoot.
No, it kicks a little bit.
I probably wouldn't buy one.
Yeah, too light for you?
Just a little bit. Well, yeah.
I like it, but I also liked it with a particular round. So I would go through these different rounds and I have these.
So it's sensitive. Auto fives are super sensitive. Even they don't, I've heard like the new ones, like the Wicked Wings, like the little bit more higher end camo duck guns, you can put anything through them. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
With my old one, you saw it wouldn't eject. There's problems with it, but that thing had been sitting for a
decade. And how I ended up with that shotgun is I wanted a shotgun for pheasant hunting. That was like during the COVID time where guns were just not anywhere.
Yeah.
And I went into Sportsman's and they had it sitting there and I'm like, oh, I've always kind of been interested in 16 gauges. Yeah. And it had some scratches on it and I talked them into giving me a discount because it was a brand new gun, but it was a little
still like $1,000 though, wasn't it?
Probably. Yeah. It wasn't cheap. I try to forget the prices of things. But anyway, what I don't like about it, it's a wood style stock, but when you take it apart,
it's a veneer.
Yeah. And it's this little teeny plastic.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Weatherby, I had
the
this.
New ones.
Some of them. I tell people like Weatherby is the best gun rifle manufacturer in the country right now. They're still made here. And
but the new ones even feel a little plasticky to me.
Well, some of them do a little bit.
Depends on the style.
Like, not like this.
Yeah. They have a...
like that, but...
So I've been geeking out on Weatherby lately, and I just go on weatherby.com because you told me you can buy the vintage boxes. You can only buy them on there. And then when they're sold out, they're gone.
Also, I went to a little gun show down in Albany. It was not worth the drive from Salem. But there was a guy selling original box, like with ammo in it.
That's
and
cool.
I took some pictures and I was like, golly, I mean, I don't need the ammo. Mm. Like some of it was like 416 Weatherby. So it had the, or 460, and it had the elephant on it.
Yeah. And the 300s like, have a tiger on them.
Yeah.
And
so if I had a gun room, like in my next house, that's the plan if everything works out.
I've got one of those old boxes, but they have the vintage box right now, but as soon as it's sold out kind of thing. But
how much are they too?
They're like $100.
Yeah.
But it comes with a full round.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I've been looking on weatherby.com. They did a short run knife, $1,200, sold out.
Yeah.
This is their 80th anniversary.
So did you see the rifle?
Yeah. They did that 80th anniversary gun, sold out, $12,500. All a engraved.
Work of art.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also had carbon fiber barrel, which I thought was really cool. So it had some. Old and
I don't
new.
Know. For 12 and a half grand, I'd like steel.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean,
I'm saying?
It's more nostalgic.
Sure.
But from a shooting perspective and a lightness of your gun,
those
that was
guys,
cool.
They care. Mm-hmm. They care. And my sister was going to move to Wyoming, and I told her, I go, please get a job there.
Please go to Weatherby.
Please go to Weatherby. Yeah. I just need a discount.
I need that family discount.
I need a family discount because I've never owned one. And slowly throughout time, and a lot of it has to do with you guys, it's kind of like, you know, made me start thinking about them a little bit, considering them, looking at them.
And there's some really cool custom gun makers too. I've been geeking out on some of these guys. Like even like the Blazers, I think are really cool looking guns.
The R8 with a straight pull, mm-hmm. You can get different. So Fred sold one, $2,800, had two barrels. And one was a 257 Weatherby barrel. I don't remember what the other one was. And I was like, I mean, that's less.
So that's the other gun that I have that's Weatherby.
That's the less than half price of what that firearm is new, because they're like $6,000 for his.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was crying. Like, late, I was like driving home. I'm like, why didn't I just call him like and get that gun? Like, if I knew, I would have bought that because of the versatility of it and straight pull, how well they're manufactured.
There's some cool guns. And some of these guys are making, like Montana, I think, Rifle Company or something. Very they make nice. Some really
Cooper
cool
makes
wood.
Makes some cool guns.
And I'm into the wood guns. I just am.
That's why Brownie needs to be ashamed a little bit by the quality of wood on that gun.
Yeah.
When you showed me that, I told my uncle about that. He's like, I'll never buy one. Mm-hmm. That is nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean...
When they go to a veneer.
Well, and I think part of it is like maybe wood's hard to get. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, it's just a cheaper, easier option.
They're making more margin on it.
It's thin, and people don't care anymore. People want functionality. The gun still shoots good. The inertia-driven stuff, all that stuff is cool, but I don't know. There's just...
I looked at that, and I was just like, you gotta be kidding me.
I know.
For that price, why would you do that?
I know.
And maybe the woods, I was talking to someone about it, and they think maybe the wood's hard to get, and it's super expensive now. That could be the case. Well, you got to think about it. Back in the day, lumber was cost nothing.
Yeah.
You know? They would build commercial buildings with lumber. Now it's all steel, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's just one way to think about it.
And the other thing with the gun thing that I've geeked out on a little bit, I've been watching YouTubes of guys restoring.
Oh,
so
because
like, you know
cool.
These guns have some nicks and dings, and I like, and there's an art to that,
you can
and
iron
a lot of different ideas. Yeah,
a
lot of different ideas of like how you scrape it and how you do it, and less is more.
Sure,
you know, just being really careful and like using the right oils and different things. And I'm not ready to take that on. That's
you
a retirement
do it
project.
With the 16 gauge, because look.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like you're going to hurt its value.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It'd be a good one.
What's funny is a gun like that, 1929. In good condition, is still a $600 to $900 gun.
So what's
for
that
a gun
worth,
that's almost $200 or $300 probably.
And maybe that might be something for you and your son to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can buy the wood for nothing, but that wood.
But also the old patina is cool too.
Yeah.
But to your point, the buttstock being basically a hunk of concrete on the back, you know.
I shot an Ithaca. So I have a little 20 gauge that was kind of like all of our guns growing up, like when you became a certain age, like that's what you'd shoot at the pigeonhole because it's a 20 inch, but it's really small.
Mm-hmm.
It has a steel butt plate. And my uncle, not this year, but the previous year, brought one.
Do those guys bring different guns every year?
I brought, okay, hold on. I'll tell you all the guns I brought for 2 days. It's ridiculous. But he had an Ithaca. It's a model 37, so they're bottom eject, which is super cool in 16 gauge. And I said, well, why don't you leave that? Let me shoot that. And he's like, okay, it rattled your teeth. Oh, I'm not joking. Like, it hurt your jaw shooting that thing. And I'm like, I don't want this. Because I was going to try to get, I have the 20. I'm like, well, get the 12. Get the 16. I'll have the little set. And after I shot that like six times, I was like, I'm not interested in owning this. You know?
Well, I'm bringing a 12 gauge that my dad has. Sure. So my dad's got a 12. He's got two 12s and a 16. So he's got an old Mossberg pump.
Perfect.
And then, but I'm not going to bring that one. So he's got an he's got a side by side, like an older 12.
Like an LC Smith or Fox.
It could be an LC Smith. I can't remember.
Those are real common.
But you know,
if it's a Parker, don't bring it.
I don't remember when he picked it up. Yeah. But I just want to try it and shoot it and see. Is it longer? It seems like a fairly long barrel. It's
probably 30 inches. Probably full.
Yeah, it's full.
Yeah, so it's probably an LC Smith, which was super common. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say don't bring a Parker, unless it's like, because those are, you know, they haven't made those in a very long time. Mm. So they're kind of valuable. They have different grades. So I brought the Model 12 and 20 gauge Winchester. I brought the Auto 5 Magnum 20. I brought two Berettas, a 686 Black Onyx, a 300 Outlander. I think that's what it's called.
You're ready.
Yeah. I bring them all because I'm like, I'm not shooting this one good right now.
So. Yeah.
And I brought my favorite, the Super X3 Winchester. It's a little bit older. It's beat to hell. But I use it for ducks. I use it for everything, right? That's like my go-to, and I don't care. It's camo.
Yeah, didn't you have one with kind of a bend in the barrel?
No, it's in the rib.
Oh, yeah.
I dropped it down on the river.
Yeah, it's not in the actual barrel.
It's
in
the rib, and then it for like 3 years, it didn't have a fiber optic in it. So I'm just looking down the barrel, which you don't need a fiber optic.
No, just, it's nice.
It's point and shoot. It's nice. Yeah. It's point. For low light, it's nice the first thing in the morning, but it's a point and shoot game. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yeah, and, it's instinct. Bird hunting to me is a lot of instinct. It's like people try to tell you, and everybody, even with the pheasant, they're always like, you're not leading them far enough, which I probably not.
Well, you can tell.
But like you just play on instincts and, you know, use both eyes open ideally, I think.
I think that you, it's instinct. Don't think, just react. Because when I get into the whole aiming thing, like you're shooting an iron sight rifle, you're not hitting nothing.
Right.
You know.
And it's just time behind the gun.
Remember the one I shot that was crossing right to left, way out there?
That was a good shot, yeah.
Pretty good shot. I just pointed and got the speed down. And if you watch those birds specifically, they will, you'll get that belly feather out. So if you're too far behind, and they'll flare back if you're way too far in front of them. Mm-hmm. So if you really pay attention to the bird real quick. And also too, the other thing, you can't not shoot a bird all year then come out there and think you're going to start knocking
true.
It down.
That's true.
The other part of
that's it. That's not the first bird to shoot at, which it was for me.
You killed one the second day for sure. You got your birds.
Yeah, first shot. Yeah.
First shot, and I was happy with it. But you know when you're on, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I think once you get that rhythm, but also it's like I'm also one of those guys that I'm not going to miss my opportunity. I'd rather shoot and miss than not shoot at all. You know, if it's the right opportunity. Yeah. Back to the running game, maybe not shoot at all is a better
move. Well, you know for next year. Because if you don't come, they're going to ask.
Oh, I want to come.
Heck yeah, man.
You know, I don't know what happens with life. I mean, it's
too hard to say.
Yeah, but I definitely plan on being there.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of fun. It's nice getting someone into it. It gives you an excuse to buy another shotgun. Because you're like, I'm going to bring my dad, so you're going to buy one.
Yeah.
There'll be another gun show between here and now. I ran into the same thing. I'm like, I need a 22. And my wife's just like, no, you don't.
My gun safe is getting a little full.
Mine's completely full, and they're under my bed now.
Right.
You know?
That's when you know it's becoming a problem.
I got one in the closet, and I'm like, before we went grouse hunting.
Yeah.
So I brought a rifle because I had a bear tag, the Ruger number one in 30. I think that's the first time you saw that, right?
Mm-hmm. 30 it's a nice gun.
It's a cool gun. Has a Very X2 on it. I brought that, but it's under my, I keep that one under my bed because I had wanted one for so long, and they're kind of expensive now, which is unfortunate because they're a really cool gun. And I started, I had like four other ones in front of that. And I'm digging them out under the bed, and my wife comes in her bedroom. She's like, Jesus Christ. And I was like, hey, this is a Hayden problem.
Yeah.
Because she went into my grandfather's gun room when we first got together 15 years ago. And she was like, is it going to be like this for you? And I'm like, yeah, that's just, my uncle's the same way. I'm the same way. And I don't know. I just like them.
Had one gun for so long. And then all of a sudden I had a shotgun and a pistol and one deer rifle.
I started getting out of the pistol thing, really.
Yeah. Now I have two pistols, and
I know, which is a cool buy because you need a pistol. That's the other part about the pigeon thing. We're like bouncing around and stuff, but they get up into the trees, and you need a pistol to drive the birds up. And if you notice, doesn't ever work. Like, yeah. It gets them up, but it's not like they come into your doorstep.
Right.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It's like, we need to kick the birds up, shoot your gun off. But they fly the other direction.
Well, and I even thought, so where we deer hunt, now that's changing a little bit, but like my son is probably going to have the youth tag over there. And what we started last year, I threw a rock, which jumped the buck that my son ended up killing. And this year we kept throwing rocks and we were jumping on bedded deer that we didn't even know were there. And I thought even like a little pistol that you could fire into the bank or whatever to get them up. I have to read up on like legalities on that. I don't really know.
Are there grouse over there?
There is, but very far and few between. There's not a lot, like at least where we're at.
Sure.
You know, antelope hunting, sage grouse everywhere.
Really?
Where I got my antelope. And
But you can't kill those.
No.
Because it's like a $50,000.
$50,000. Yeah, exactly.
Which is
and so
wild.
We were going by this private ranch and there was antelope on it. And we talked, the kid just happened to be driving up. We talked to him and then we ended up getting to hunt on his property, which was cool. But he told us that. He goes, people just don't know what they are and they'll shoot them. And if they get caught, it's $50,000.
Well, how many do you see hit on the road?
Tons of them. Yeah, he said like, yeah. So they did like his dad runs this 10,000 acre ranch that's owned by like an IBM executive or something. But you know, they run the farm for the guy and they run cows and all this. And it's a tax write-off for that guy.
Yeah.
But they restored the property for sage grouse habitat. There was like a big grant or something for that. And so they planted everything in juniper and da 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 da. And so they just have a ton of them there. I mean, it's just this huge, basically sage grouse refuge, if you will, you know?
I've never been over there and really messed with it.
They're a cool bird, but they're they're not real smart, you know, either, you know?
You know, some things meant to go extinct.
I mean, a lot of these birds, they don't have a lot of brain room, you know, that's...
Oh, no, they don't. And I'm not saying pigeons are smart by any means, but they make you feel dumb. Well, when you're shooting them.
Well, and it's that whole vision thing. And just, you know, they are a more intelligent bird than I think a lot of birds are.
I think people for that kind of hunting are not used to it, in which the speed. So a duck cups its wings, right?
They come in like that.
Sound like a little jet, super cool. Same thing with geese. They're coming into something. You don't have that there. They're blowing right past. So I think it's hard for. No other animal that we're really hunting is moving at such quick speed across such a short distance on our end.
Right.
Over there, where the old guys are hunting, they have 80 yards. Did you notice that?
To see them coming in.
They're like, Mark? I'm like, where's that bird? It looks like a speck.
Yeah.
You know, there's no points where we're at to say Mark. So that's the thing. A bird comes, you say Mark.
And you're shooting. Yeah, for us, it's you don't do that. It's
like, oh.
Yeah, where we were at. But again, it's a respect thing. Those guys have earned those spots.
I don't even care if I pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I'll go out there and stand with an empty shotgun.
Yeah.
It's about spending time with the old guys. And I love it because I've known them my whole life.
I love that you're closing us out with that. I'll sit out there with an empty gun. Because Brent and I did a podcast a while back, and he's like, he was talking to this old guy who was sitting all day salmon fishing, and the guy had a hunk of lead across the river and was just sitting there with his rod. Wasn't even trying to catch a fish.
I like it.
But there's just something, you're out there for a different purpose. Yeah. It's not about the harvest.
Well, man, my phone rings all day. We've been here for an hour, almost 2 hours. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people text messages. I have 18 missed phone calls. Been here for an hour and a half.
Jeez.
So that's one of the things about when you and I could do the grouse thing. We got up to a point and like my phone stopped ringing. I'm like, let's just drive around for a little bit.
Yeah.
We went on that walk.
Mm-hmm.
I got a picture of those trees with all that moss. And
oh, yeah. Those were cool. Big old growth trees. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I'm like, just that little exhale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the sad reality of life. Those guys are going to be gone soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get some stories out of them, you know, and hopefully
secret tape recordings.
I want you to listen to them. They're out there. They're not very. So I got two different kinds. I have some out at the pigeonhole, kind of hard to hear because the phone's kind of like in my pocket. I'm like standing. You know,
why is Crips?
And also, do you understand? My grandfather's crazy.
Yeah,
he was crazy. Yeah, I love him, man. He's just
just mic him up when we get there. Hey guys,
I wish we could do that. We should be open to that. And then the other half of the recordings I have are actually in his house. And it was when we were in between my grandmother's passing and his passing, we were doing a bunch of genealogy stuff. Mm. And so we would ask him questions about, do you remember this person? Because they were alive when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to get some of that stuff. And then you start like digging up like their past a little bit, yeah. You know, which is like, ugh. You know, my grandfather's like, I wish you didn't know that. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, you're my grandfather. Like, I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to ask them questions and try to get their youth. So I'm trying to do that with Fred quite a bit. You know, he's 81. He did have a kind of a wild life. He was all around. He was in the war and just trying to get stories, you know. If you notice, he started over there with, before the story he started was actually before he was born. I don't know if you picked up on that. He would say the Indians.
He wasn't real nice to me in the beginning.
No, well, he's not nice. He's still kind of not nice to me sometimes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
No, but the next day he was.
Yeah, he was.
You were like just one of the boys.
Yeah.
Which is a great feeling. But he started the story, I don't know if you picked up, before he was born, the Indians used to hunt him up there on the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
I remember that, yeah.
With single shots. Mm-hmm. Muzzle loading shotguns, mm-hmm, and that's where he started. So it's kind of cool to pick up on that stuff, and that's why I don't mind standing there with an empty shotgun.
Writing that stuff down, even if it's not audio recordings, it's like get home, sit down with a journal.
Well,
jot
I've been
some
told
that
same
down.
Story for the last 25 years, so I know it's burnt into my memory a little bit. But yeah, no, I think that's a lot of it, and that's why I don't mind just, you know, I didn't shoot for the first 2 hours we were there the first day because it was like, hey, Sam, you hang out here. I got to go talk to the fellas a little bit.
Oh, totally. Yeah, you know? They don't like you, so just stay over here.
Stay
away from
tomorrow
them.
Tomorrow will be better type thing.
Yeah.
But it's fun, and it's like you said, it's not as, I've talked about it quite a bit. It's not about pulling the trigger. It's not about killing stuff.
Yeah.
It's about getting out there. I mean, I got to show you something new. You showed me something new. Now that I'm super addicted to that, like just one more little thing we can do, drive up for a part of a day and knock it out.
Something you can play hooky for half your work day and get answer your 20 phone calls when you get home.
God, it's terrible, man. Yeah. It's terrible. But, you know, it's fun. Hopefully, with the weather changing now, we'll have another one to record shooting some ducks.
That'd be great.
Which would be cool, because have you killed any ducks? Mm. I got a couple. They're a lot of fun. They're a cool bird. And we're going to get to go with someone who, he's going to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
He said he wants to come on.
He's a good shooter, too.
His house, I counted 114 mounts in his house.
Wow.
So very accomplished, which is going to be super fun. And he's a great, I got to have a little conversation with him because you notice he's a little nuts too, right?
Well, everyone out there has
an edge, yeah. So that's going to be fun. And then hopefully with the weather changes, we can do some fishing. And we also need to, something we've talked about is.
And now you got a book to read too.
I got a book to read. And I'm actually really excited to read it. About it.
It's well written. There's a lot of cool things in there.
You were saying it's kind of more academic though?
Yeah, it's some heady stuff. Heady. I went pretty slow and I did one chapter at a time and just, you know, I'd read a chapter a night
here's a biological hazards chart.
Yeah. There's some technical pieces, but then there's some storytelling at the beginning. It's a good balance, but also like it's heady enough that I wanted to absorb it and I can't just like power through something and have it actually stick.
You think you want to read it again too?
Probably.
Sure.
I mean, he's going to come on the show once we figure out how to do a remote podcast. So
we'll figure that out. It's a learning curve, right?
Yeah.
I think like everybody, I think we get so complacent with our safety and with the passing of that gentleman from the town I'm from really made me think about it a little bit.
Well,
more.
And it's one of those things where you never think it's going to happen to you. And
golly,
even if you think you're prepared, but in the woods, it doesn't take much.
No,
and one wrong step and you're in trouble. And,
yeah, I don't got a lot of friends left. So if I lose you or one of the other guys, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
You know? Who am I going to go hunting with?
Yeah. You know? Well, thank you for taking the time this morning.
Absolutely.
I know you're busy and it's good. I've been harassing you for a while to get you in here and you got sick and this life.
Yeah,
and
I have a petri dish for a daughter. So you know how that, you remember, right?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
So there's that, then work and then. So you just, every stuff comes up and you just got to start making time to do these things. And I always have fun. It's great. And
me
I like
too.
To see the gun collection expanding.
Yeah. I wanted to bring you my latest stuff so you could check it out.
I think you made a lot of great purchases. I got a great gift out of it. I actually don't think that this is a Sekum. I think it's a Creco because it's a model 603. We can talk about that later. Mm-hmm. And there's that guy down in Lebanon. It's very similar to one of the rifles that I was going to buy from him.
Huh?
So, and it was imported by Tradewinds too. So. Huh. A fine collection of firearms.
I know. I like it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. Thanks for being here.